Welcome to Talking History, and the third show in our four-part series on the myth of the gunfighter in the American West. This is your host, Brian LeBeau of Creighton University's Department of History. In a moment, we'll be speaking to Casey Tiefertiller about Wyatt Earp, whose colorful career is the source of so many myths. But first, let's look back at this week in history. On January 21, 1793, King Louis XVI and Queen Marie Antoinette were executed. It was the height of the French Revolution, which had begun in 1789, and both had been charged with treason. King Louis and Queen Marie resisted the revolution from the start, agreeing only to what would allow them to remain on the throne. Forever associated with Marie Antoinette, of course, whether she actually uttered it or not, is her supposed response to the starving French peasants, "Let them eat cake." By 1792, Louis and Marie's resistance had not only failed to reverse the tide of revolution, but also had led to the suspension of the king's powers. When his secret dealings with foreign powers, encouraging them to invade France to put down the revolution and restore him to the throne, were discovered, both Louis and Marie were imprisoned, tried for treason, found guilty, and condemned to death. They were guillotined in the Place de la Révolution in Paris. Turning to items of interest in the news, the case of Dr. Samuel Mudd, convicted of conspiracy in the assassination of President Abraham Lincoln in 1865, is in the news again. The morning after Booth shot the president, John Wilkes Booth visited Dr. Mudd seeking treatment for the leg he broke jumping from the president's box to the stage in Ford's Theater. Mudd put a cast on the assassin's leg but later claimed he did not recognize him. A military commission did not believe Mudd and sentenced him to life in prison. He served only 4 years before being pardoned and released, but his name was never cleared. In 1992, Dr. Mudd's grandson, convinced that the Army Board of Corrections of Military Records, that the military tribunal that convicted Mudd lacked jurisdiction, saying Mudd should have been tried in a civil court before a jury of his peers. The board recommended that the verdict be set aside, but Assistant Army Secretary William Clark refused the recommendation. In 1997, Mudd appealed the case to a U.S. District Court. The judge ruled in Mudd's favor and ordered the Army Secretary to decide whether the conviction should be set aside. A decision is expected at any time. You're listening to Talking History. In the first two shows in our series on the myth of the gunfighter, we talked about the origins of America's obsession with outlaws of the Old West and the violent lives they led, and the life and legend of one gunfighter in particular, Jesse James. Today we take up the story of another popular gunfighter, Wyatt Earp. To help us understand this fascinating figure, I'm pleased to welcome Casey Tiefertiller. Mr. Tiefertiller is a former writer for the San Francisco Examiner, whose long interest in Wyatt Earp has resulted in a highly acclaimed, recently published book, Wyatt Earp, The Life Behind the Legend. Mr. Tiefertiller's book has been described by various reviewers as a major contribution to the history of the American West, the first complete and accurate look at Wyatt Earp's colorful career, and the book to end all Earp books. Welcome, Mr. Tiefertiller, and thank you for joining us, and congratulations on the success of your new book.
Thank you very much for inviting me, Brian. I appreciate your interest.
Well, it's good to have you. Let me ask you, just how exaggerated is the myth of the legend of Wyatt Earp?
Well, it's taken on many connotations. Perhaps the strangest exaggeration is in calling him a gunfighter in the same way as Jesse James and John Wesley Hardin and many others. Wyatt Earp only appeared in two stand-up gunfights, really, in his life. And he, all through his career in law enforcement, which was really only a little more than 7 years, his whole effort was to prevent gunplay. He did everything he could to avoid gunfights and was really almost a frontier psychologist more than a gunfighter.
What methods would he use? Was he able to talk people into surrendering? I mean, what did he do?
Well, that he would talk people into surrendering. He would talk them out of committing action. He had a way of stepping up and disarming people as they drew. And he was really tough. He'd beat the heck out of them. He wouldn't kill them, but he'd beat the heck out of them. he'd hit them over the head with a gun, and I guess in a way that's gunfighting, but he didn't pull the trigger. He used it as a club, and all through his career, he had made every effort he could to avoid the gunfight.
Did he have a reputation in his day of being a gunfighter? I mean, did other gunfighters see him as one of their co-equals or whatever?
As he got older, as the myths grew and people talked about how he'd killed 20 or 30 men, which was farcical, he was called a gunfighter, but that was into the late 1890s and after the turn of the century. In his day in Tombstone, people didn't think of him as a gunfighter in Kansas or Tombstone, but people didn't really know about gunfighters then. The term didn't really come along until the 1890s, and he was considered a tough man both with fists and guns.
How did his reputation get started? How did we first learn to learn? During his time, how did we get to know about Wyatt Earp as a gunfighter?
Wyatt Earp had a small reputation during his days in Kansas. The Police Gazette covered a couple of stories in which he was involved, and his name appeared nationally in the Police Gazette and from events in Kansas. And then by the time he came to Tombstone not to be a law officer, but to try and run a stage line. And when he got to Tombstone, he found himself back embroiled in law enforcement with all the nastiness and the criminality that was going on. And his national reputation really started on October 27th, 1881, the day after the OK Corral, when news reports were spread all around the country of how the Earp brothers had faced off against a band of outlaws. His reputation exploded and became of major national import 5 months later during the Vendetta, after Wyatt had one brother killed, another brother maimed for life. Wyatt went out and led a posse and became judge, jury, and executioner, and went out searching and murdering outlaws. And at that point, newspapers across the country were following the Vendetta on a daily basis and were making Wyatt Earp's name a national name. And for the rest of his life, that fame followed him, whether he wanted it or not.
Most of the other people we've talked about in the series, the other gunfighters, Jesse James and so on, got started in the newspapers much the same way, but then soon made it into cheap novels and then eventually in the 20th century into film and television. Was that the same trajectory more or less for Earp?
Very different, actually. What happened with him, most of those cheap novels that you mentioned were done of people who were dead, who couldn't refute the legend that was being made of them, with the exception of Hickok, of course, who had novels written about him during his time. There were no cheap novels written about Wyatt Earp. There were a number of newspaper and magazine stories during his life through the late 1880s and into the 1890s and as long as he lived talking about it. But Wyatt Earp ran into a very unusual situation. In 1896, he sat down for a big interview with the San Francisco Examiner, and it really spread his fame. It was a big three-part interview. And shortly after that, he was selected to referee a prize fight, and he awarded the decision on a foul, and it was very controversial. He was accused of fixing the fight and illegally fixing the fight, and it was horrendously embarrassing for him. And so after 1896, he really shut up. He really quit talking. He quit trying to get his name out there until the situation had gotten very strange. By the 1920s, there had been many magazine stories come out and call him an outlaw and a criminal and all kinds of horrible things which he knew were not true. And he finally tried to get somebody to write his biography, a friend of his named John Flood. It was just a terrible effort. Flood couldn't write at all. And after the Flood effort failed, and that had been in part with William F. Hart, the old silent movie actor, who had been trying to get the biography written so that Hart could make a movie out of it. And after that effort failed, Wyatt Earp met a magazine writer named Stuart N. Lake, who would come out with a book called Wyatt Earp Frontier Marshal, which in many ways captures the whole image of the West. It's a wonderful book, wonderfully written. It tells about Wyatt's life. It gives essentially his side of the story. But Wyatt died during the making of this book, during the writing of this book. And so Wyatt never saw the final product. And so Lake had gone out and talked to other people and found a few stories that were not quite true. He exaggerated a few stories, and he built Wyatt Earp into the greatest hero who ever rode the West. And out of that, the book appeared in 1931, and almost instantly it became a magnet for movies. Out of that, there were two movies about Wyatt Earp that came out quickly. And then after World War II came My Darling Clementine, which had been in preparation before the war. And that set off just all kinds of movies. And the image of Wyatt Earp has just grown dynamically through movies and television.
How important was it that he was also a lawman? I mean, he's one of the few gunfighters, if you can still use that phrase, that we've considered in the series, who was a lawman for at least a part of his career. What effect did that have on his reputation?
Well, I think his reputation was very strange, because after the Vendetta, there were huge debates because the population was greatly divided. The population of Arizona was greatly divided on Wyatt Earp had acted whether Earp had acted properly or whether he had acted improperly. And what he had done, the situation was this. The laws were not protecting the citizenry. If criminals were brought in, they always had alibi witnesses. They always had ways to get off. So there was no choice. There was no other way to protect the citizenry than for Wyatt Earp to become a law unto himself. And that left a very divided legacy in Arizona, where about half the population thought he was a great hero and half thought that he was a horrible outlaw. And for the lingering effect, his role as a lawman had a great impact, because as with Lake, where Lake built the legend and made Wyatt stand as the greatest lawman in history, in many ways, the greatest lawman in American history, it had a great effect on cementing his popularity through movies for generations to come.
I want to come back to that point again, because I think it's important when we consider Earp as a hero here. But let me ask you just one other sort of informational point. You mentioned O.K. Corral, and that's certainly the one event that we all, if we know anything about Earp, that comes to mind. Can you give us at least one other major event in Earp's life that we ought to recall, or something we could learn from that?
Well, Wyatt Earp was a very interesting character all through his life. He had remarkable toughness and remarkable qualities. Even when he was 62 years old, he led a posse into the California outback, and it was a face-off over a mining claim. And Wyatt Earp had his posse, and another group came up, and they were all armed, and Wyatt Earp walked over to the other group, grabbed the shotgun out of the man's hand, and with a burst of profanity told him it was too early in the morning to have a fight. Let's sit down and eat breakfast. And they sat down and ate breakfast. The whole situation was diffused. The other party left, and instead of gunfight, they were left to let things be decided in court.
That's a great story. I like that one.
Oh, it's an incredible story. And one of the people who was there said, I never saw a man show so much nerve as Wyatt Earp showed that day.
How would you summarize his years in Dodge City? Again, usually the substance of many films.
Well, Dodge City's wonderful, because Dodge City was started by the liquor dealers expressly for the idea of taking money from the Texans. The Texans would drive cattle up to the railhead, and Dodge City was awash with saloons, brothels, dance halls, every entertainment a man could want. And so the Texas cowboys would come up, and they weren't outlaws. They were just generally rowdy troublemakers. It was like Palm Springs on spring break more than anything else. And the job was not to kill people, but to prevent the rowdies from getting out of hand. And what Wyatt Earp did during that period was he kept those guys from getting into trouble. He might hit them over the head with his gun. He might beat them up. He might do anything, but he'd have them out of jail the next morning so they could go buy more liquor and spend more money on the ladies in the brothels. And during that period, probably the defining instance for him was there was a woman murdered named Dora Hand, who was a saloon singer. And he and Bat Masterson went out on a posse and found, were able to locate the killer. And that made national news. It was in the Police Gazette and was probably the first part of Wyatt Earp's national, or the major part of Wyatt Earp's national fame that he got early in life. But for him, I think Dodge City was an experience learning how to be a lawman, learning that the role of a lawman is can often be preventing problems rather than acting after the problems are already done. And much of what he did was prevent problems in Dodge City.
Okay. Well, one of the questions I've asked all of the people we've interviewed in this whole series is, you know, why the American people decided to make a legend of whatever outlaw we were talking about or whatever gunfighter we were talking about. What was it about Wyatt Earp? What did we single out, and why did we hold that up as a characteristic to make him a hero?
Wyatt Earp did something that nobody has ever done, nobody else has ever done in American history. Wyatt Earp stepped beyond the law to become the super law officer. We see it now in movies with Dirty Harry and RoboCop. But what Wyatt Earp did was step beyond the law to preserve order. And no law officer has ever done that. I think it's a dream of many law officers not to be hampered by the courts. But Wyatt Earp, on his own, was able to take it upon himself to go out and eradicate a crime problem without being hampered by courts, juries, or judges. And was willing to step beyond the law and take his own chances with that. And in retrospect, in a land where we are a land of laws, you look at what he did, and we have to say that what he did was wrong, but in this case it was necessary, because if he hadn't done that, Tombstone would have fallen into chaos and absolute disorder.
Well, that's interesting, because in the very first moments of this series, Richard Slotkin made somewhat the same point, only he said that one of the reasons that we mythologize these figures is because they do step outside the law, because they do take things into their own hand. And he mentioned it in the context of vigilantism. But to him, that was not a heroic thing. That, as you suggested in your remarks just at the end of that answer, that this wasn't necessarily something that we should praise, but yet you seem to, in some way, see this as a heroic quality.
Well, I think, actually, this is part, that's a great question, Brian. One of the things that makes Wyatt Earp interesting in this point is Wyatt Earp had, all through his career, acted to defuse vigilantism. He'd stopped vigilantes from hanging a little gambler named Johnny Behind the Deuce. He'd been part, with his brothers, he had been part of a group to stop the hanging of Johnny Behind the Deuce. He'd acted in many ways. He had always been opposed to vigilantism until the point where there was no other choice. And I think this is something where this is almost a personal choice for everyone who examines this issue, and something that really resounds in our feelings. Is this heroic, or did he do something very wrong that should be and he should be demonized for it? And this was a hard question for me. It's a hard question when you grow up in a nation of laws where the laws generally work. But you have to understand that sometimes there are cultures and areas where the laws fail to work. And in this instance, in this one particular instance, had Wyatt Earp not acted, there's a good chance that the outlawry would have so controlled the town that other citizens would be killed, and it would have been a whole nightmare situation.
Okay.
I think he was a hero in this regard.
Great. Well, thank you. And I'm afraid we're going to have to stop there. We're out of time, but thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you very much, Brian.
You've been listening to Casey Tiefertiller, author of Wyatt Earp, The Life Behind the Legend, published by John Wiley & Sons. Welcome back to Talking History for our historic site of the week. Following up on our discussion of Wyatt Earp, we've picked a place long associated with Earp, Dodge City, Kansas. Here to tell us about Dodge City is Talking History's Cindy Workman.
Dodge City, located west of Wichita in southwest Kansas, has been called many things, most notably Hell on the Plains and the wickedest little city in America. It is famous for its rich history as a frontier cow town. Many of the early settlers in Dodge City were gamblers, gunslingers, and cattlemen. Thousands of longhorn cattle were driven into Dodge City over the Texas Trail, and it became a rowdy town famous for its saloons, outlaws, and Boot Hill Cemetery. Bat Masterson and Wyatt Earp earned their fame as lawmen during this time. A popular tourist destination, there are several places to see today in Dodge City, the authentic replica of Front Street with the Long Branch Saloon and Boot Hill Cemetery among them.
For our weekly op-ed, we continue on the subject of the myth of the gunfighter, and in particular the myth surrounding Wyatt Earp's famous shootout at the OK Corral. Here to tell us about those myths is Alan Barra, author of Inventing Wyatt Earp, recently published by Carolyn Graf.
116 years ago, last Monday, at about 2:47 in the afternoon, Virgil Wyatt and Morgan Earp, accompanied by a young tubercular dentist gambler from Georgia named John Henry Doc Holliday, turned left off Fremont Street, now Highway 80, in the sprawling Silver Boom camp of Tombstone, Arizona, then to a vacant lot in the back of the OK Corral. Virgil Earp, the town marshal, said, "Boys, throw up your hands. I want your guns." After which two quick shots were heard. 30 seconds later, every man in the fight was dead or wounded except Wyatt Earp. The gunfight in back of the OK Corral has become part of our American mythology, even an enduring international symbol of American confrontation. In July, the Toronto Star cautioned General Motors and the United Auto Workers that, quote, both could learn a lesson or two from the gunfight at the OK Corral. And in August, the Singapore paper warned that, quote, a trigger-happy America blazing away to glory like Wyatt Earp at the OK Corral inspires no confidence in its role as a global policeman. In fact, international symbol may not completely capture the gunfight's hold in the popular imagination. In an episode of Star Trek, Captain Kirk and Mr. Spock were forced to fight the Earps at the OK Corral. Kirk, it seems, must have landed on planet Hollywood. All of which belies the gunfight itself, which wasn't that big a deal after all. What happened was, the Earp brothers went down to arrest Ike and Billy Clanton and Frank and Tom McClowry, four men affiliated with a group of cow thieves known as the Cowboys. In cow towns like Dodge City, he was renowned for his ability to keep the peace without firing a shot. The men he killed in the lot in Tombstone may have been the first he ever killed. Since his death, Wyatt Earp's image has gone through three distinct phases. First, in the 1930s, he was evoked as an antidote to big city gangsters like Al Capone and Dutch Schultz. In the second, from about the end of World War II through the Eisenhower era, he stood for America's Cold War resolve, holding the thin blue line in defense of democratic ideals. By the late 1960s, his name was linked with predatory white America. In the 1971 film, Doc, a Vietnam War allegory with a script by Pete Hamill, Wyatt was a sadistic bully who made Lyndon Johnson-type speeches over his murdered enemies. Why did history in Hollywood choose to make the gunfight at the OK Corral immortal? The partial answer is that Americans have always looked to the West, to the Alamo, to Custer's Last Stand, to the OK Corral, for defining moments in our national character. Another is that, in time, post-Marxist historians saw the Earps and Cowboys as representatives of opposing culture and political forces. The Earps were Republicans who worked for Eastern capitalists like Wells Fargo, in the words of one sociologist, and corporation gunfighters, while the Cowboys were resistance gunfighters of Southern democratic values, if those values can be stretched to include cattle and stagecoach theft. Why Wyatt Earp has been singled out is a more complex question. The answer may have less to do with the gunfight than what followed it. In retaliation for the Tombstone fight, Virgil and Morgan were ambushed, and Morgan was killed. Wyatt then formed a posse and hunted down the assassins, bringing back no prisoners. Wyatt Earp never apologized for his actions, and he died without finishing his autobiography. But nothing would have struck Wyatt Earp as odder than the way people have used his name to push their agenda. In 1996, Patrick J. Buchanan kicked off his presidential campaign by posing with guns and gun belts in front of the OK Corral. It's a good thing for Mr. Buchanan that Earp wasn't at this media dash. It might have hauled him off to court for violating local gun control.
You've been listening to Alan Barra, author of Inventing Wyatt Earp, published by Carol N. Graf. Finally, we turn to our weekly segment, Coming Attractions, wherein we call to your attention upcoming films, television programs, museum exhibits, or anything else that may be of interest to you. And appropriately, we found an event involving Wyatt Earp. From the Heldorado Amphitheater on Toughnut Street to the OK Corral, Tombstone, Arizona certainly remembers its wild and woolly past. And on Memorial Day weekend, it will remember Wyatt Earp in Wyatt Earp Days, complete with mock gunfights, a chili cook-off, hangings, simulated I hope, saloon girls, and much more. On Labor Day weekend, as part of its rendezvous of gunfighters, Tombstone will welcome gunfighter aficionados from around the country. For more information on these and other events in Tombstone, visit Bat Masterson's Girlfriend Saloon at BigNoseKates.com. And that's it for another week of Talking History. I hope you've enjoyed our program and that you will join us next week for the fourth and final show in our special four-part series on gunfighters of the Old West. Our subject will be Billy the Kid. In the meantime, we invite you to send us your comments or suggestions either by email at talkinghistory@creighton.edu or by U.S. mail to Talking History, care of the Department of History at Creighton University in Omaha, Nebraska, 68178. Until next time, from the studios of KIOS-FM in Omaha, Nebraska, this is Brian LeBeau.